transition over to Amit, who is going to introduce our exciting guest moderator this week, who's Sachi Maniar. Amit, are you ready?
I am. Thank you very much, Rahul. Appreciate it. So I've been looking forward to this call for quite some time. A little bit 3 years ago, I decided that I was going to take an extended trip to India, rediscover some of my roots, find opportunities to serve. And I remember asking Nipun if he could introduce me to some folks that he knew out there, and I could get in touch and kind of create my own little summer program. And lo and behold, one of those individuals ended up responding was Sachi. And so we ended up trading emails for a while, and right away I knew that there was something very unique, very special about her. And several months prior, I had sent a link to a friend about this summer India program, where essentially called Inspire, which some of you are familiar with. And basically, the way that I like to describe the program is that every country has its own set of challenges and issues. And in those countries, there are always a set of people and organizations that are working to address those issues. And so Inspire was a program that basically teamed up with these organizations and, you know, introduced youth from the U.S. to these issues, to how they're addressing them. And it's often led by different coordinators. And so I was debating whether to do that program. And in my email exchange with Sachi, I found out that she was actually going to be a coordinator for it, and so it made my decision pretty easy. And when her and I connected, it was like I had known her for lifetimes when I met her in person. And so since then, we've become very, very close. When I landed Mumbai, her place is the first house that I go to, and it's very much to see her, but kind of honest, her brother and mom are pretty amazing, as well as her mom's food. So a little bit about Sachi. You know, she's had her hands in many things, from social activism, education and awareness campaigns, social change-driven documentary and filmmaking. She's worked with various organizations worldwide on issues like gender justice, youth empowerment, peace and conflict resolution, media for social change and rural development, and a lot of different education and health awareness issues for youth and women in slums and poor villages throughout India. And so, and I think what stands out to me is that she's just done so much at such a young age, and that to me is just becomes a continual inspiration. So I guess sort of with that, Sachi, I wanted to welcome you to the call, and I appreciate you taking the time to do this, and very excited for you to be here.
So thank you so much. It's so great to hear so many voices that I know, and it was great to hear everybody. And thank you so much for putting this together.
Yeah, that's great. In 2003, you had traveled to sort of the war-prone areas of Jammu and Kashmir, and you ended up shooting your first documentary film out there amidst some very challenging circumstances. And so I was hoping you could share with the callers a little bit about what brought you out there and then what ended up driving you to create this film.
That's when the Kargil War had just happened. India-Pakistan war was over, and also the movie Laksh had released, which is about this Indian soldier going to the border and, like, saving people and, like, you know, fighting the war. And that was actually the inspiration. I was always more, like, in school, in college, I was a little more patriotic and, you know, very, like, rigid about it, people standing straight in national anthems and things like that. And so I was really fascinated by the army. I wanted to join the Air Force at one point. I wanted to be in the army and do something for my country. And that's when I was like, I want to see this life. And nine of us wrote to the army saying, you know, we would like to come and visit you guys and see what you do. And so we just took on. It was a long 9-month paperwork that we had to do, but we got in and we got to visit these war-prone areas. I was traveling with nine media students, and I was the only one who was studying economics and political science, and I really didn't know, like, anything about filmmaking or cameras. And it so happened that on the trip, all those nine people, once they got back, they got really busy, and I had to make the film. And that's how I stumbled upon filmmaking. So, yeah, that is Kargil.
That's great. So, you ended up, bringing up this issue with Jammu and Kashmir, thinking about the conflict between India and Pakistan. And I know that you work as a project coordinator for an organization called Friends Without Borders.
Yes.
And so I was hoping you could tell a little bit about that, because I really think that's a great story in terms of bringing together people at a level that sometimes it gets missed.
Yes, so after Kargil, actually, I had gone to Kargil thinking, I'm going to do something for my country and I want to be one of those people who dies for my country and all of that. And after that, I joined an organization called Beyond Borders, which was actually like nine of us holding that space together. And one of the workshops we had was on conflict. And this facilitator, Vinod Sridhar, he kept asking me questions on why do I hate Pakistan and why do I like... I mean, I didn't hate Pakistan. It was just that I was, like, I was pro-war. Like, I was supporting India at the time of war because I'm an Indian. So he kept questioning me. And somewhere I realized, like, all these things were so superficial, And I came to the conclusion that I didn't really hate Pakistan. And Beyond Borders was an organization where there were participants from India, Pakistan, Bangladesh, Sri Lanka. And so actually when I met my Pakistani friends, it was amazing. So, I mean, all my sort of blocks, dissolved then. And then, of course, I got connected to John and Rahul and Mark and Yumi and through Ma Movies, and that's how Friends Without Borders happen. And
can you share a little bit about what they do, like what the organization did?
Beyond Borders or Friends Without Borders?
Friends Without Borders.
Friends Without Borders was basically an organization where young people, kids, from India wrote letters to kids from Pakistan, and kids from Pakistan wrote letters to kids from India. The idea was, if we connect the heart of children, and we connect the young generation, then at least some of these ideas will start changing, just as mine did. And mine changed drastically from joining the army and fighting the war and killing the Pakistani soldiers to actually making friends. And some of my best friends are from there. So yeah.
You bring up a really good point, because it becomes such a heated issue, especially in India, this
right.
the fear someone becomes very violent. So I guess what was it that actually helped you transform to move to this space of heart connection rather than, getting lost in the nationalism of India?
I really feel that when, you just have a decent conversation with somebody and you connect heart to heart, that's the end of it. You don't then see those barriers of caste, religion, countries, nothing, nationalities. It's about, for me, I think just when Vinod kept questioning, I just realized, there were so many of these barriers that you just, so many glasses that you put on for no reason, and they just come with a whole baggage. And it's just about removing them and seeing a person as you and seeing yourself in that person.
So Sachi, one thing that I have always been inspired by you about is your ability to be just so wholehearted with whatever you're doing. And I think this is just a phenomenal example of that. I mean, when you started off at, going to Kargil, it was sort of being pro-war, and then when that insight went off, you were able to just be so completely wholehearted with Friends Without Borders, which is almost the exact opposite sort of, intention. But you were so completely there and so completely gung-ho for it. And so I wanted to hear a little bit more about how it is that you just sort of generate that excitement and wholehearted enthusiasm that you put into everything, even when, it's clear that it's happening in this background where your understanding of the world is growing and changing. And I think for other people, it can, even for me, it's like, when I realize that I'm growing and changing so quickly, it's hard to be so gung-ho about whatever it is that I'm feeling or doing right now, because it's the idea that this is going to change. And yet you seem to sort of transcend that and just be wholeheartedly, you know, doing whatever you're doing. So if you could share a little bit about what happens in the background when you sort of make a choice, and how you put all that enthusiasm and energy into it, I think that would be really insightful.
So I think energy, it's easy to come with me. Like, I can't sit still. So it's something that just happens. But yes, supporting, you know, views, I feel like today what I say is my truth for today, and then tomorrow it may change. It may change, but at least if that's what I believe today, I should give it my all. So, you know, when I was going to Kargil, I was equally gung-ho about that. And I was like, yes, this is what I want to do, and this is what I believe. And when those lenses come off, and then I'm sure there are so many more lenses that will come off. So, yeah, I don't know if I answered your question.
I think it's a pretty good answer.
Yeah. You have, and sort of with that spirit, that is that same spirit is what's taken you across so many different organizations. And I guess I'm curious, I mean, you know, just thinking, and then, you know, if even just someone looks at your service track record, I mean, they just blown away all the different organizations you've worked with, the different issues you've tried to focus on. I guess, is there something that's driven you to do this, especially at such a young age?
So I've always been attracted to, I hate calling this social work, but yes, social work. I feel like that's who I am. Like, I get attracted to knowing what an organization is up to. If I hear about some good organizations, I'll go and make a visit. And that could be something as random as I hear them about them today, and then tonight I'm on a train to go see them. But it's just this whole development sector that really attracts me. I don't know actually how I've landed up in so many different things, because I don't plan them. They just come. Like, one day you get a call saying, okay, we need help with this, and that, you know, like, I'll be up and going ahead and doing it. So it's not something which I plan, really. It's the projects that come my way and I do them. Like, everything, you know, like yesterday, 2 days back, I got a call from an organization that I clicked pictures for, and they said they really like the way I see things, and so they would want me to make a film on them. And it's just random, and I don't think anything great about those pictures, but they do. And so I think it's all serendipity. It's all lovely coincidence.
But, you know, that's still speaks to, I mean, it kind of going back to even today's theme about, you know, blooming where you're planted, I almost feel like you are one of those individuals that ends up planting seeds in so many areas, and then all of a sudden things just start blooming. And so I feel like that probably has something to do with that as well. And speaking of planting those seeds, I guess, you know, one thing I wanted to talk about was hosting Awaken Circles in Mumbai. And kind of how you, because I know that you initially struggled with whether you wanted to be a host or not, whether it was going to be possible. And then you ended up moving forward given your busy schedule and given how often your work takes you to so many different places. And so I was hoping you could share a little bit about that and what the impact has been, not just to you, but to your family as well.
Sure. I actually started Wednesdays because I kept getting these emails saying, if you're hosting Wednesdays, please let us know because you would like to attend. And this was a seed that Nipun Bhai had sown, and he was like, maybe you should think about starting Wednesdays in Bombay. And I was really reluctant because I didn't know what my family would think or what my mom would think. And again, it was that thought that let me just jump in and then we'll see what happens. You know, if I can do it for a week, 1 week, 2 weeks, 1 month, it doesn't matter. So that's the thought I started off with. But slowly, like, I think even less than a month, you know, at Wednesday was a big family, and Wednesday has that awaken, has that energy where it attracts those kind of people where they immediately become family. We've been 2.5 years down the line. My family does Wednesday even when I'm busy, I'm at work or traveling, and it's become a regular weekly thing. And I think something, and I really feel that we definitely get more out of it than the people who come to Wednesdays. And one of the things that my family's really got is companionship. For my mom, it's become a bigger family than it was. And you know, like today, and I was really worried about mom because I wasn't sure if she would take to this idea. And she did wholeheartedly. She did her Vipassana. She meditates. And she also calls up my friends and says, hey, let's go for a film now. You know, people come to Venice and they're like, okay, you know, let's do this. So somewhere like we've really formed this community where we are open. We can, you know, it's a space where we are ourselves. And I really value that. And it happens because of the setting of Venice Days.
You know, so that also brings up something you mentioned, Vipassana. And I was hoping that you could sort of maybe talk about how that has lent to, you know, the work that you do and just how that plays a role in your, meditation plays a role in your daily life.
I think I did Vipassana 4 years ago and I've been there 3 times after that. But I try to keep my practice. I don't do very well. Every Wednesdays is when I definitely meditate, but because of the way my work is, I don't manage to sit 1 hour a day every day, you know, like, so that I have, and I'm trying to learn how to do, keep that schedule.
Yeah, it's always a careful balancing act.
It's also like I'm a doer, so like, I mean, I keep my yoga practice more holistically than Vipassana, but although I love Vipassana, so it's trying to keep that balance and figuring out. So I'm struggling.
So, you know, in thinking about all these different organizations, some of the challenges that you work with, and then, you know, just kind of taking a look at just sort of even your own life, you know, you are no stranger to challenge in your own personal life. And I know that you unfortunately, you lost your father at a very young age. And I was hoping you could maybe share a little bit about sort of the impact it had on you and your family and what challenges you had to go through and try and overcome.
My dad, let me tell you a little bit about my dad. He's he was this really awesome human being. He was, like, when he had money, he was a king, and he would, like, constantly give away gift people. He was, like, a walking, talking gift economy person who, you know, didn't even realize that he was gifting people, and he did. And I think most of my values come from him. He was also someone who kind of would come home from work at 8 o'clock and say, okay, you know, we're going out of town, we're going to some place, and we'll get on a train, we'll go to Goa, and you know, we'll eat bread and butter, but we'll make sure we do like all kinds of adventure rides and things like that. And I do feel like most of my travel, you know, craziness and my adventurous spirit comes from him. So and then the one lesson that I learned from him was that, basically from his death or from his life, was that you make all these plans and, you know, you don't, you may get around doing it, you may not get around doing it, but if tomorrow your life goes, it goes. So, like my father had all these plans, he started a factory, and one day he's not there, he met with an accident, he died, and then the next day we were all there waiting. So for me, like, every time I face a conflict of what, of choices, of what to do, I ask myself that question, that if it was my last day today, where would I want to be? I think that gives you absolute clarity in life as to what you want to do next. But in terms of life, I mean, generally after my father passed away, we've been, I was very fortunate to have my mom as my mom because she supported me in everything that I did. And I mean, I think that's where I got my fighting spirit from. So, like, I just wanted to earn, be independent, do all kinds of jobs. And the reason why I did all kinds of jobs was because of this. So it's made me who I am. And I really thank my father for that. So it's been lovely.
Yeah, and it's great to see that you
live out your values in that very same way. In terms, coming back to this idea of your travels, you actually got to spend some time in California a few years ago as an intern with the MetaMentor program and along with Service Space. And so I was hoping you could share a little bit about, you know, your experiences here for the first time, having grown up in India your whole life and then coming out here, and some of the joys and the challenges that you experienced coming out here.
I think one more thing that I had kind of, you know, fixed in my head was that I'm not going to travel outside India till I see all of India, and especially not US. But then when, you know, things happen, and again, that was a block, that was a lens that I removed, and, you know, I was like, wow, okay, cool, I'll go and I'll experience, and this is something exactly what I want to do. I want to study nonviolence. And so being with Meta Mentors and being with Service Space was amazing. Like I don't know, a lot of, I can't even count the number of gifts that I've got by being in that space. It was challenging. I am very, like, I love India, and to be outside of India was a little, I would be homesick quite often, and then Audrey would come and babysit me, but it was quite good. I made some amazing friends. I met some amazing people. I interviewed a lot of people because I was working on this documentary on nonviolence, and I learned a lot from my director. I learned a lot from Lorenzo, who was also asking the same questions that I was at that point. And to specify, some of those questions were, you know, how do you keep that balance between earning money and doing the things that you really love doing? What is it that you really want in life, and things like that. So for me, like, of course I learned a lot from the mentees too, but I was lucky to be paired up with Lorenzo, and of course Service Space was rocking, so I can't, yeah.
So that does bring me to sort of that next question, because you, in line with what some of the challenging questions that Lorenzo brought up, how is it that you do find that balance between, you know, playing the role of earning money and supporting your family and service, and sometimes when some of those things seem to be in conflict with one another?
I've come, like, even if we talk about the theme, like, I was at, in 2008, 9, 10, after I came back from US, I was thinking I'll just switch completely and be in Ahmedabad. Manav Sadhana is a family I love, and, you know, I bloom very well over there. I feel myself. I don't have to pretend to be anybody, or, like, it's very easy to be me. And but then, you know, I also felt like when I was in school and colleges, I wrote notes to myself where I said, okay, I want to be independent. I want to do this for my family and that for my family. And money's always, money's always been a little bit of a struggle. But it's about, right now I work in ad films, and I keep my balance in that way, where I do these jobs, which would be like 20 days or a month or 15 days sometimes, and then I do things which make me happy with that same money. So I feel like it's good to keep that balance, and for me that works really well. There are times, of course, when you face, when you're down and out, and you're like, what the hell am I doing with my life? But then, you know,
Hello?
I think we may have lost Sachi. Her internet might have gone out. I don't see her on the call. Yes, she did, in fact, drop.
I'm sure she'll join right back in a second. I guess while we have the space, maybe I can share a Sachi story with all of you. So one of the things that Sachi is very well known for, if you're a friend of hers, is that she does many, many sort of random acts of kindness, and she does not like to, she keeps it very random most of the time. So she, you know, if you ask her or prod her, she won't share until you drive her crazy. And one of the stories that ended up coming out through after a long train ride from Ahmedabad to Bangalore one day was,
you know, we were talking about what are the different ways you can go out and make an impact on the people around you. Like, one of the things when you visit India, you constantly have people that are coming up to you and asking for money and begging. And, you know, your heart, you know, all of a sudden you have a natural instinct that you want to just give in that moment. But, you know, at the same rate, there are many sort of things that are going on behind the scenes that you need to be aware of as well. And, you know, what's amazing to me is that one time Sachi was in a rickshaw and there was a little kid that came up to her and asked for money. And, you know, instead of just sort of shooing this kid off, which many people out there unfortunately do, Sachi always takes time to engage with the kids. And so she'll do one of many different things. You know, sometimes she'll have candy with her and she'll sit and she'll chat with the kid. You know, other times she'll give the kid an experience with, you know, she might be listening to something on her iPod or something like that. And so while she's at the traffic light or whatnot, she'll take it off and she'll put the earphones in the kids' ears and whatnot, and just sort of give them a chance to listen to music and just sort of connect in that moment. Or at a train station, she'll run around with them and whatnot. And so I think one of the things that has always sort of stood out to me about her is just how she is really able to just connect with just about anyone in that moment, and just sort of eliminate any of those sort of conceptions or boundaries or borders around that. And so definitely a fun Sachi story. I don't know, Rahul, if you can maybe share something as well about an instance or time that you've been with Sachi while we wait for her to jump back on.
Sure. You know, the first time I actually heard of Sachi was in Delhi during phase two of Friends Without Borders. So the team had actually just arrived to the Sri Aurobindo Ashram in Delhi, and John was telling me that there's another core team member who's coming on.
Hello.
And hey, Sachi, you're back.
Hey, I'm so sorry.
No problem.
I think I was talking about Bloom where you are, and I was talking about how do I maintain that balance. Okay.
Yes. We were talking about, like, you know, the role of money and, you know, working, you know, she was talking about, you know, she was at sort of that crossroad where she was trying to decide whether she spends all of her time in service and maybe working at Mount of Sadhana or earning for her family and becoming independent. And she was working through those issues.
Right. Yeah, did you get all of it?
Yeah.
We got just cut off in the middle, Sachi. You were talking about
okay,
how...
so I just summarized it. So basically, I was at a point where I was thinking whether I should jump completely into doing what I love doing social work and, you know, being in Manav Sadhana or, like, any other community which was, you know, where I was bloomed very easily. Or should I, like, be in Bombay and also deal with the practical situation in life? And I figured that it would be better for me to kind of learn how to balance both. And so I work in Atoms, and I earn from there, I kind of put it into the things that I love doing, whether it's traveling or, like, making documentaries, helping out NGOs. So I feel like, I mean, there is no, you know, answer to the, you know, where should you be? But for me, right now, what's working is the fact that I do both, and I figure out a balance in life. I've also been, you know, when a lot of times people ask me this, and I, like, it's something like Vipassana. Like, when you're in the center, it's easy to kind of meditate, and, you know, but if you're able to sustain that practice when you're out of Vipassana and out in the world, then that's it. Like, you've achieved it. So right now, my life is about constantly trying to achieve that practice of being rooted and grounded, even when I'm doing things like atoms or, you know, corporate videos or whatever.
You know, one of the things that you
brought up is that, you know, working on various different types of films. So one of the things I'm not sure if people on the phone know, but you kind of have two lives, you know, in the film world. On one side, you may be shooting, you know, some commercial or maybe even a movie, and then on the other side, you're doing sort of documentary filmmaking. And so I wanted to know kind of, you know, what each of those, doing those sort of like very different types of work kind of speaks to you, or how you kind of, you know, approach that.
I mean, of course, docus or making NGO films, it comes very naturally, and it's usually very difficult to ask for money for those kind of things. And it's something that gives me absolute pleasure, so I don't even care about that, you know. So it comes very naturally, but when I'm, and it's an easy setup, like, you are with people you want to be with. You are doing things that you want to do. And on the other hand, ad films is something that I love doing. Like, I love the hectic schedules, and I love just the act and creation of that entire product. But I do see a lot of, like, waste, and, you know, I see people's mind, which are more money-oriented, product-oriented, results-oriented, things like that. And my answer to that is that, you know, to reach to the soul of people who are also working in those kind of situations, because I've been very lucky, and, you know, especially after I came back from Elemental, and when I joined AdSense, I've found a lot of my kind of people. So, like, some days I have a producer, my producer, someone who gives me a job, come to Wednesdays and sit with me in silence. And I feel like that's an achievement. Like, for me, you know, it's about really finding that that personality in those in people who do that things.
Mm.
Does that answer
your
question?
Yeah, no, definitely does. And I love how you're able to just pull people from that other world into your world. And so, you know, you've done, like you said, you know, your passion is doing documentaries, and you've done a number of them, whether it's for the UN on issues in India, whether it's the Army documentary that you first started out with. You've, you know, you've worked with organizations like Global Rickshaw and Man Movies. And I was curious, what documentary was one that really shifted you from within? And was just a very impactful project to you personally?
Wow, okay. Well, there are a couple of them, but I think the documentary that I want to make now, which is, it's something that's really impacted me. And that is, I mean, this friend of mine, Tejal, she goes to the remand home and works with kids who are caught as child labor. And I am really touched by that issue and the way the kids are, and I would love to make a documentary on that. So that's my, like, I think that is a project that will move me, change me, inspire me. But from the projects I've done, each one I've got something out of it. Like, there's one project where I was working with the widows in Varanasi and Vrindavan, and to see that life, and, you know, to see the rigidity in people, and like, it was about this. So we also covered the issues of sati, and, you know, we go inside the sati temple where the pandit is like, you know, this is it, you know, you die, that's what you're supposed to do. If your husband dies, you die, like, it's no big deal. And so those kind of incidences where people are just not aware, like, what's happening, you know, I find them so far removed from a city like Bombay that it kind of disturbs me most of the time.
So I guess, you know, in coming across, you know, some of these individuals, you know, you've worked with Manav Sadhana, for example, for a number of years. You know, you've worked on some of the different projects, with whether it's with youth or with the women. I guess I was hoping you could maybe share a couple of the stories, or one, maybe just pick one or two that really sort of stood out to you in terms of, you know, something that you didn't think about or something that you didn't realize. You know, oftentimes we'll approach situation and we think we know
you know, about X or Y or Z issue, or we think we know maybe even a solution to that. And so, you know, in terms of thinking where you approach the situation, you thought one thing and then you ended up discovering something different just through your interactions with an individual.
So this is not in my sadhana, but it's in this NGO that I started, I mean, Beyond Borders. We started a project called Male Joel, where we were working with the transgender community in Bombay. And it was, again, one of those impulsive things where we see, like, this transgender on the road, and we're like, you know, why are we so, why don't we see this, you know, why don't we acknowledge them, why don't we kind of, why do we just shun them away? And we basically went with these big ideas and big project notes and saying, you know, we are going to go to schools and colleges, and we're going to talk about gender, and we're going to talk about transgenders and break it down for people and actually make them meet transgenders. And while that part of the project was really successful, there was this other part where we said that, okay, at that time I was into theater and I was the stage manager also. And so I was like, okay, you know, we would you conduct workshops and have the hijras write a play, direct it, and perform all by themselves and do it at the best theater place in Bombay. And while this looks amazing on paper and it's a great idea and we would have easily got funding for it, I think 3 weeks down the program, we were like, what are we really doing? We're basically putting our ideas on them and saying, okay, this is what we want to do. And that's not how things are done. So that was also a very big eye-opener in terms of how to go about doing social work. Where you don't go with a plan, but you discover solutions. Does that answer your question?
So in working with so many different issues and working with so many different organizations, you've come across, I'm sure, some incredible people. And I just wanted to know if there are any individuals that are particularly influenced you and serve as your sort of continual role of positive inspiration.
I think the two of you are on the call, apart from that, Jesh Bhai, Nipun Bhai, Guri. For me, like, when I'm down and out, I will just open up Nipun and Guri's pilgrimage walk and just read through it, and that's super inspiring. But these are people who keep me grounded, like Jesh Bhai, Nipun Bhai, you know, Audrey. So many of them. And the entire service-based family, for sure. Like, yeah, I think that's my support system. You want me to tell a story about somebody?
Yeah, that'd be great.
Okay. This is like, I think this is my first time. It's my first time when I was meeting Jesh Bhai, I think. And actually, Rahul had told me, just go meet this person. And I was like, okay, fine. And I take a train to Ahmedabad and go meet him. And I think the next day is Nipun Bhai's birthday, and so we like walk across, and I've never done this before, where, you know, in the night you walk across and like 5-6 people together, like, going and giving out blankets and shoes to it was December and it was really cold, and giving out shoes to people sleeping on the road, and then actually going to an ashram to serve food. And, you know, like, you see, when you walk, it's one thing that strikes me about Jesh Bhai is that when you walk with him, you see the opportunity to serve. Like, you feel it, and you feel his love. I don't know how to explain it, but it's just that feeling that's incredible. And for me, that's one person who I love and admire, and just, I mean, yeah, I'm just truly inspired by him.
And has any of his sort of approach or thinking, like, led to changes in your approach to people?
I think one thing that, you know, you learn from Nipun and Jesh Bhai is don't think, just do it. It's like, if you have a thought of going and talking with that person, just go ahead and do it. Like, you know, there's no, like, thinking that's involved. And while I think I'm like that in most of my activities, but when it comes to maybe doing random acts of kindness, I do kind of, if I have to do it intentionally, I think. But if I'm doing it and something comes my way, I'll just do that random act of kindness. I won't like, I don't have to plan it. So for me, just that one thing really touches me where, you know, he finds these creative solutions to everything and he has like, and whatever he talks about, he talks with so much compassion. Like, I mean, a man who can forgive anybody for any kind of activity, anything, even if someone harmed him, is there's a lot to learn from them.
One of the things I want to do, Rahul, is that we can maybe just open up the Q&A, and then, you know, we can continue the conversation with Sachi, but it'll also, if anyone on the call then has questions, they can sort of jump into the queue and we can just kind of dance back and forth, I suppose.
Amit, can I interject a question before you move on to your next?
Absolutely, absolutely.
So, Sachi, one of the things I know that you must have heard over the years from, you know, sort of parental-type figures and just sort of older people is the idea of being in one place for, like, a long amount of time, like at least a year, and just doing one thing for that whole time. And I know you've thought about this a lot. I know you've encountered that message and you've thought about it a lot. At the same time, you have an orientation that's very much like focused around projects, you know, and it kind of suits the way that you live life too, this sort of dual life where one foot's in the sort of film and, you know, film ad world and the other world, the other foot is in this passion around social service. And so I wanted to hear how you've reflected upon that message of just sort of being in one place and doing one thing for a long amount of time and what the evolution of your thought has been and sort of where you're at now with that idea.
Right. So one other question that older people ask me is that who are you and what do you want to be? And I think while, you know, I feel both of them are very interrelated because I honestly, it's not me to be in one place and do it, but yet if I found a project or found something which was my true calling and I felt like this is what I want to give my life to, I would. So I'm not afraid of commitment, but I am definitely not sure at this point what that commitment would be. And I... also, it's not me to kind of be in one place. I don't have answers yet. I am still questioning that. And most of the times I'm like worried about this whole thing of, you know, being in one place and being more focused and doing things. And also, you know, sometimes when I reflect, I feel like maybe I'm not going deeper when I'm, you know, because I'm doing this only on project basis and I'm not really kind of going deeper to understand what the issue is or what, you know, just kind of getting my head around things. But I think my answer would be I haven't found anything right now. And also, like, I am slowly coming to this conclusion that you don't have to be anything. Like, you don't have to be a filmmaker. You don't have to be a social worker. You don't have to be someone who works on gender, on peace, or any of that. I'm really coming to this conclusion that it's just today, and I mean that's what's important. And as you know, and the person I am, like if you put me in a problem, like I'll figure out a solution and, you know, work around a project around it and get it out. But to decide what problem, it's not happened yet.
Mm. And how is that sort of living in the present moment, or your skin rather, at the present moment of just, you know, not necessarily being one thing or anything in particular, translate to other people? Like, how do you, because I think that idea, it's a beautiful one I think a lot of people on the call would resonate with that, but yet so many people's identities are trapped up with, you know, tied up with what they do, right? Like, I am this, like, my work is who I am, or I do this, or I like this, and you have such a broad eclectic range and seem to sort of double down on the idea that you don't really have to be any of those things. You don't have to tie yourself to any of those. So I'm just sort of curious how that notion has like translated into the way people, new people who you're just meeting, sort of understand who you are or the way you convey who you are to someone else?
It goes both ways. Like, people, like, when I read the introduction for this voice call, and I was like, oh my God, I do all of this? Is that right? And then I also meet people who feel like I'm all over the place. So there are people who feel like I'm really taking life as it comes and living it as an adventure. And there are people who feel like I am totally all over the place and confused and don't know where I'm headed. And that's also because I have those moments too. Like, there are times when I feel like that, where I'm like, oh God, I don't have an identity. I can't call myself a filmmaker. I can't call myself this, that. Or like, there are times when I see people in the ad films climb the ladder really fast while I am still, you know, at a lower level where because I am doing so many different things, it's easy to climb that ladder, but it's just because I'm doing so many different things, I don't do it as fast as they could. I am down and out then, and that's what I convey then. But then there are moments where I really look, and honestly, like, even in spite of all the things, of, you know, all the sort of difficult moments, I feel like I've never had a job that I didn't like, or I've never been in a situation or picked up something that I absolutely detested. So I don't have complaints at this point.
Mm. That's beautiful. We have a question in the queue.
Hi, this is Michelle calling in from Santa Fe. I'm very interested in that project you talked about, the Friends Across Borders. Is that it?
Yeah, Friends Without Borders.
Yeah, Friends Without Borders. You talked a little bit about your own experience with it. I would love to hear about your experience watching people getting involved with that. What happens when they get involved with a project?
What happened when people got involved with Friends Without Borders?
Right. Now, what happens when they start making friends? Can you talk a little bit about your observations about what happens to people involved in the project?
Yeah. So, Sati, like, even like the children that were writing letters to each other, did you see any kind of...
Right. Oh, yeah. Totally. There were times when I used to go to the school and take workshops and talk about India and Pakistan, and we'd go, like, from cricket to, like, all the things that we enjoy together. And we would talk about what is the problem when we hear the word Pakistan? What is the problem when we hear the word conflict or, like, you know, dushman, enemy, you know? So, and when, you know, kids talk, they talk, like, they are no different. They talk with the whole baggage of what their parents have told them or their grandparents have told them. And we used to have long debates with kids before they wrote letters. And in every class, you would find at least 5 to 7 kids who had a lot of difficulty in writing those letters, while others would be totally, like, enthusiastic about it and write letters. So I think my experience in taking some of those workshops was that, like, I could see some of them shift, and just like I did, and that those letters were really, like, very touching.
Right. Did you see any shift into a bigger picture of humanity, or was it focused specifically on the areas?
The fact that they changed their view and decided to write a letter, I think that was a starting point. That itself was the big achievement.
Thank you.
Sachi, this is such a beautiful call. Your spontaneity and your life and your liveliness, it just jumps right across. And it's so beautiful to hear about your journey. I can feel the, you know, the vivaciousness and energy in you. So I just wanted to thank you for being who you are and doing all the beautiful things you're doing. And for those people who reflect on you being scattered, hey, they need to learn to be spontaneous like you. So much love to you.
Thank you, and I'm looking forward to see you. I've heard a lot about you.
Thank you.
Beautiful. Move on to the next question.
Hi, Sachi. My name is Sanana. Thank you so much for doing this call. I've really enjoyed listening to your stories and your thoughts. My question is about Friends Without Borders. This is a cause that's kind of close to my heart. I'm Sindhi, and our family got evicted during partition because we were Hindu, and since then there's been a lot of animosity between Hindu Sindhis and Muslim Sindhis, and so this idea of writing letters across the border really appealed to me. But my question is, in my personal experience, personal interaction is very important. You know, face-to-face kind of interaction is really important to help bring down these boundaries. And I was wondering, do you feel that letter writing has helped that? Letter writing is able to break down these boundaries, or do you think that personal interaction also is necessary, and is that something you guys have thought about?
I think both help. So letter writing, of course, did help. I joined Friends with Our Borders in year two. Year one, they had like amazing, successful stories where kids connected and kids kept in touch. I was also a part of this organization called Beyond Borders, where we did the same thing, where we were actually meeting friends in Pakistan and we were interacting with them, and we were sitting in a workshop together for 7 days. And that was, I felt like, of course, that was a step ahead. Like it just hit the ground and said, okay, you know, come on, let's get rid of all the crap and say we're the same.
Mm-hmm. That's really beautiful.
So, yeah. Yeah, mm-hmm. Thanks.
Hello, Sachi. This is Asha from San Diego. You really are very exuberant and very impressive. And in this young age, I have to really congratulate you and your parents. And you're doing an amazing job, and please keep doing what you're doing. I have a small question for you. Have you ever thought of doing projects addressing the violence against women in India? The rape cases, incest. Have you thought of getting involved with all that?
Yeah. Thank you, Asha. So basically, I do get affected by those cases. And also, you know, violence in India is, I mean, what you see on television is one part of it. But when you go to every domestic household, you'll see violence against women. So although I am not somebody who anymore believes in activism, I feel like I really want to go by this quote which says activists need to be more spiritualist and spiritualists need to be more active. And that's the balance I'm trying to find. And I think, so one of the projects that I do want to work on is of positive stories of women bringing about change in their own lives and fighting the violence and fighting the situation and getting out of it. So that's a project that I have in mind. Especially there's a library in India for Muslim women in Mumbai, actually, for Muslim women, which was opened up. And as per the law, as you know, like Muslim women don't get access to books outside their religion. So this library actually keeps books which are of revolutionary women, including Ismat Chughtai, and you know. And change their worldview. And these women have been able to fight their situation very well. So I want to focus on solutions like that and make stories on women who figured out how to get out of it.
Very good. Very good. Thank you so much for doing so much for this world.
Yeah, actually. It's actually, that reminds me of yet another place of impact or involvement by you. You have been involved with putting on these large 10-day festivals around the 15th century poet Kabir. And I was hoping that you could tell us kind of why you decided to become involved with that project or that festival, and what is it that's moved you about Kabir personally?
Kabir is the 15th century poet whose origin is debatable, but basically, he's spoken about giving up your religion, giving up your identity, giving up everything that, you know, blocks you from touching the person and connecting heart to heart. And for me, that whatever he said, he's spoken about environment, he's spoken about women independence, he's spoken about religious giving up your religion, and all those things sort of are to even today. Like, so for me, that was one big attraction, that every issue that you face right now, you can find a Kabir poem or a Kabir quote and relate it to that. Or even for one of my favorites is about how you can water a plant as much as you like, but it will bloom only when the season is right. So, I mean, for me, like personally for me, that quote is perfect to my life. And I feel like many other such poems are relevant even today. And the reason why I chose to do the Kabir Festival and organize it is because I felt like when I heard Kabir songs, it brought a shift in me. I could feel a sense of, I felt like that spiritual connection. And at the same time, I also felt like my thoughts, my ideas were changing. And that's one of the big reasons I feel like it's very important, like even when you're fighting issues or fighting, working on different things, it's not the arguments, it's not activism that will get you anywhere. It's bringing that shift within people that will get you somewhere. And through Kabir, I think that's one way to get that shift in people.
So you touched on something that's very insightful, this idea of bringing about shift and connecting. How is it that you approach a situation or individuals, when there is conflict that arises? And so I'm just kind of, what's your approach when do you become aware of that, and then what do you do to shift that situation?
I think communication is something I really prefer doing. I think that's the first thing I do if I find myself in conflict, and actually putting myself in other person's shoes and listening from there. What he's exactly saying, what does he feel, and then approaching the conflict, really. And yet there have been times where, I've been completely swayed by my own identity and ego and done a horrible job of it. So just putting that in.
Sachi, I have a question that sort of rewinds a little bit to the question that Asha from San Diego brought up around women's issues. It occurs to me that, in India, you're kind of an anomaly. I mean, women don't have the same level of sort of freedom and ability to sort of move around society and sort of be adventurous and do all these things that, that they may have the opportunities to do in the West. And yet, you've been doing that on your own for quite a long time. I mean, I think when you first came up to Friends Without Borders, you were 19 and you had taken a train, from Ahmedabad all the way to Delhi all by yourself. And, that wasn't the first time you've done something like that. I mean, you just have a way of moving through society as a young woman and not encountering any of the challenges that I think many other young women face or fear. And so I was wondering if you could just sort of reflect on how that's been possible for you or what you've sort of carried with you that has allowed you to step into the space that's just sort of that's held you from any of the issues that hold other women back.
Actually, the circumstances favored me. I was 9 when I lost my father, and then I think I had to go to school alone. And that itself was a big thing. I was in an auto rickshaw for almost 20 minutes and reach school, and then after that come back by bus, which is something I'd never done. And then, I think my mother was really busy making ends meet, and it was just, we were pretty much growing up on our own, and I think that's when I was like, this is it, and I want to be independent, and I picked up my first job when my school had not even finished. So all of this came very naturally to me, and And when I grew up, I was treated more like a tomboy. My father wanted a son. And so I was just lucky, I mean, to be grown up as, you know, someone who's bindas, courageous or whatever, like, you know, just free. And I could do that. And I really, like, I mean, earlier, of course, my mom didn't have much of a say because she was so busy doing things and I could do whatever I wanted to do. But when she got free, we had to sort out some stuff. And that's when, like, even today, like, I have the complete freedom. I don't feel like, you know, any kind of resistance from my family. And I really give it to them for giving me an open hand and saying, go do what you want and what you love and just be happy.
Actually, that is beautiful. And your final thought on your family giving you an open hand on whatever you wanted to do kind of leads to my question. So when it comes to hosting Wednesdays, and how did your family take it, and how have they evolved since? I know your mom is like super excited about it now, and she calls your friends for movies and whatnot. So how did their transformation kind of happen with the start of Wednesdays at home?
I think I played it very strategically. I first took my mom to Vipassana, and then it was an easy thing to convince them. I said, let's just try it out once, and we'll see. Let's host it once, and then we'll see whether we like it or not. And just the first Wednesday, we could feel like the love of so many people and feel the difference. Like, it didn't feel like strangers were coming home and coming home to meditate. It was just a family, like from day one of Wednesdays. And that has become a big support system for my family, like anybody in the Wednesday circle or outside. And just the fact that every Wednesday we do end up sitting together, and there is this positivity that enters the house, and, you know, with so many people, it's something that not only me but my entire family is kind of addicted to.
Beautiful. Thank you.
Thank you.
You know, one of the things, Sachi, I was hoping you could do, and this is when you dropped off the call momentarily, I shared the story about the young boy that came up to you while you were in the rickshaw, I think, or you were on your bike, and, you know, you let him listen to your headphones and whatnot. I was hoping you could maybe share a story about sort of random acts of kindness, and really, more importantly, what is the role that it's played in your life? Why is it that you continue to do so, or, you know, find those opportunities? And I know that one thing is that you don't even see it as necessarily random acts of kindness, it's just a way to be, but I was hoping you could share a little bit about that.
So this is Amit's favorite story. I usually travel, like, I used to work in this one place for 4 months, my longest job. I used to travel in an auto rickshaw from my house to Bandra, and there was one kid who used to, some of the kids would always come for begging, and when I'm at the red light, I used to just take out my headphone and make them listen to some music and ask them what song I should play for them, and then they'd do a little dance once I put them either in their headphones or like speaker. And then they would do a little dance and enjoy that moment till the signal turned green and we would go. But, I mean, I like Amit said, I really feel random acts of kindness is not something, you know, I do intentionally. It comes naturally, and I prefer doing it naturally. And I see a moment of where I could be of service to somebody, and I take opportunity of that moment and be of service. And I'm really fortunate, and I'm really grateful that I have that that presence of mind to see that moment and that opportunity. Yeah.
So I guess, you know, one of the things I wanted to talk to you about was, what direction do you see yourself going? Right? You just said 4 months was one of your longest projects. You know, the conversation, the question that Rahul asked about, you know, jumping from project to project, and I know that you said that you're still searching. I mean, do you have a sense of what direction you want to move in, or what it is that would call you to anchor down?
I do know service is something I want to end up in. I feel I definitely, like I'm really attracted to this quote which says, "Let me be used up," and I would want to be like that. I want to be completely used up in service. Yeah, and I don't know what direction I'm going in, really. I am floating, and I am at this point not worried about it really. But hopefully in a few years I would probably have something that I want to commit and give my life to.
One thing, this idea of sort of even being in limbo, often for most people, you know, including myself, it's very uncomfortable internally and it's very unsettling. And so I guess, how have you found equanimity with that? With not having...
Oh, I don't. I actually find... As in right now?
Mm-hmm.
Sorry, I didn't get your question. Okay. So I do have my moments of limbo, especially when I'm not working, and I am a workaholic. So I move from project to project, and I work a lot. But when I'm not working, that's my period of limbo. And I find myself sitting with those questions until I take them. I can take them, and then actually giving a call to one of you guys and saying, "Hey, I don't know what I'm doing with my life. Help me." So my noble friends have really helped me.
That's wonderful. Okay, so thank you very, very much. Really, really appreciate all the wonderful stories. Again, I just still just blown away by just the number of things that you've had your hands in, and at the young age that you are in, you know, it's truly an inspiration. And you know, like Asha had brought up, you know, just this idea of the impact you have and role model you play for women, it continues to.
Thank you so much for like everything, for convincing me to come on call. I feel like many other things, this has come to me as the serendipitous encounter, and also as the, you know, come to me, first call has come to me a little early in life, but I am really happy to be here, and some of the questions that were asked really got me thinking about many things, so thank and help me get clarity, so thank you so much, and I'm really sorry if I rambled a little bit, so it was really good listening to both your voices.
Thank you.